It is time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Mangoes, papaya, chestnuts from the fire. In my house of straw, I have so much more.
How are you doing this morning, Arthur?
Pies.
Mangoes.
I'm fine, and I'm raring to go here in, what is it, teen weather. But anyway, so I want to continue what I started last week, which was talking about reading through my first cookbook written in 1978. It's being re-released by Macmillan in a series called Classic Cookbooks. Who knew I was classic? But I'm having fun with it. And as I'm trying not to eat sweets, but I do, I end up giving in to something I shouldn't. And, you know, it's usually crappy, to use a French word. And I said, you know what, let me bake something, and this way, at least it won't be crappy. I hope not. So I baked a cake that's in cooking in a small kitchen that I used to bake all the time when I was young and haven't made probably in 30 years. And it's a pound cake. We love pound cake in this house.
Do you like pound cake? Pound cake is good.
Pound cake is great.
It's got a texture and it's got a sweetness.
Yeah,
it's not
got everything
too sweet.
You want. Actually, it's got everything you want.
Okay.
So this one has actually more than you want. It's a cream cheese pound cake, so it calls for quite a lot of fat. Meaning you got an 8-ounce package of cream cheese and 2 sticks of butter. So it's a half a pound of butter and a half a pound of cream cheese. Of course, it wasn't that enticed me. It was the fact that I lace it with a mixture of cocoa and cinnamon and a little bit of superfine sugar, which, by the way, you don't have to buy. They're charging a fortune for superfine sugar. I'm sure I've ranted on this one before. Take your regular sugar, your granulated sugar, and whirl it in the food processor and make it finer. That's all you need to do. And I do that when I bring home the sugar from the supermarket and before I put it in the sugar canister. So I use it for everything. It does not change the volume of the sugar, not in any significant way. So anyway, you mix together. I have there were several levels of why I wanted to make this cake, and one level was I have this incredible cocoa that I'm always looking to use. It's Caffarel. It's an Italian chocolate company, and a lot of things. The original Tartufo, as made at Tre Scalini in the Piazza Navona in Rome, that's the originator of this chocolate-covered ball of ice cream. The chocolate is Caffarel. So, and I've always been fond of Caffarel chocolate because I like, you know, Italian chocolate, for the most part, has a particular texture that not everybody loves. It's a little on the brittle side or hard side, and that, of course, makes perfect a coating for a ball of ice cream. Anyway, in my market last year, I was able to buy Caffarel cocoa, so I bought it, and it was so good I went back and bought more. And now I never use this expression, and I'm sure it's not true. I have a lifetime supply of Caffarel cocoa. So I'm always looking, and it's hardly a lifetime supply if I'm always looking ways to use it. So this was a very minor way, but it was a way. So you make this batter. I'll tell you about the batter in a minute. And you put half of it in a 10-inch. I use my grandmother's that I use for nut cakes and sponge cakes, and it's a 10-inch aluminum tube pan. But if you're a real good at it, you probably can make this in a 10-inch Kugelhopf or bundt pan. You know, a crenellated pan, but it's got to have a tube in the middle for it to bake correctly. It is a very heavy on the fat cake, as I said. So you mix it, but for the filling, you just mix up 2 tablespoons of good cocoa. A tablespoon sounds like a lot, but it wasn't too much. A tablespoon of cinnamon. You might even make it, you know, it depends on how old your cinnamon is. You could even, if it's freshly ground cinnamon, meaning you just opened the jar, you're not grinding cinnamon by yourself. A tablespoon is fine. If it's more than 6 months old, I would use a heaping tablespoon.
This is what I was going to ask you. How long? I mean, cinnamon is something that I think I might have.
It lasts a lot longer than herbs do. Let's put it that way. But still, it's a ground. You know, if your cinnamon sticks, it lasts for the ages. Practically, I don't know. I have cinnamon sticks that are years old. I bought a large supply once, and I'm still working on it.
And they're still fine.
I mean, if you put one in a pot with water and simmer it, it'll clean the air in your kitchen. So, so it's just 2 tablespoons of cocoa, 1 tablespoon of cinnamon, and a half a cup of fine sugar. And you just mix that up. That's your little filling. So the cake is, I want to say that, So anyway, Carol Walter, a New Jersey-based but eventually nationally known baking teacher, taught me how to properly mix cakes, which I didn't really know in 1978 when I wrote this recipe. I don't remember how it came out, but using Carol's teaching, for me, this recipe, as written, pretty much, came out great. So this mixing instruction goes for all pound cakes. You of course, pound cakes are called pound cakes because originally, before there was chemical leavenings, meaning baking powder and baking soda, you had to mix this cake for a long, long time to get air incorporated into the dough, and it was 1 pound of butter, 1 pound of sugar, and 1 pound of flour. But that's not the case here. We do, in fact, have 1 pound of shortening, but it's a butter, 2 sticks of butter, a cup of butter, and an 8-ounce package of old-fashioned Philadelphia cream cheese. That's what this is made with. And you put those into a large mixing bowl. I used my my big stand-up mixer, and you cut the butter. This is important. Cut the butter into tablespoon pieces. Don't just throw the sticks into the machine. And work the cream cheese and butter together using the paddle attachment. Now, if you're using a handheld, this is too hard to do by hand, but if you're using a handheld mixer, just keep going, because the point is to get the butter, which will eventually soften, but it takes a few minutes of beating. You want it starting it cold, and cold cream cheese. You beat them together until they are very well mixed and smooth, and that's going to take a bit. It's going to take, 3, 4, maybe even 5 minutes.
And it's really...
Then you add your eggs. Then I start adding my sugar. And in fact, when it's about halfway, you think the butter and cream cheese have creamed together about halfway, meaning it's looking lumpy, not yet smooth, you can start adding the sugar. A little at a time, Carol Walter instruction. 1.5 cups of sugar added very gradually, even tablespoon by tablespoon. I don't need to do that. I mean, if you're clumsy with a bowl shaking it in, use a tablespoon, but otherwise just shake in a little at a time as the beater is mixing, and altogether 1.5 cups. Now I would even increase the speed a little bit and add the eggs 1 at a time. Now, per Carol Walter's teaching, I beat my eggs into the batter for a full minute. before adding the next egg. You know, the instruction usually is, and as it is in cooking in a small kitchen, add eggs one at a time, beating well after each addition. Well, that doesn't mean just beat for 10 seconds. Beat it for a full minute. This is going to impact the texture of your cake in the end. And whether or not, if you have ever had trouble with pound cakes not baking through, like having a raw spot at the bottom or in the middle, this will help you remedy that situation. That's your problem, is that you aren't beating long enough. So one egg at a time, and in this case we have four eggs. This is a very rich cake. And then you're going to beat each egg in for a full minute. That means it's going to take you 5 minutes just to add the eggs. Now you're going to add some vanilla, 1.5 teaspoons. I'm looking this up. I mean, sometime next year you're probably going to be able to buy this book. 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla. And then, as if I was writing this book today, I would have had you mix all the dry ingredients together as the first thing to do. And the dry ingredients are 2 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour. I measure this, per Carol Walter instruction, by spooning it out of the canister into the measuring cup and then leveling it off. If you scoop with your measuring cup and then level it off, you're compacting the flour more, and you're going to get really a different measurement. So 2 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour measured that way. Mix that with 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder. And I use a spoon, a whisk, whatever's handy, just mix that together. This used to be the old, you know, sift it together. But you don't always have to sift. In this case, you don't have to sift. I added to this recipe, not printed in the book, a big pinch of salt. These days, everybody... taste buds have changed since 1978, and we sort of miss a little salt in baked goods, whereas we didn't always used to put salt in.
I can't imagine, it's the whole chocolate, it's the Toll House chocolate chip cookie theory. I'm just surprised, and I'm old, that there wouldn't be a little salt in there to just kind of knock a little bit of that sweet.
Well, you know what? This is not an overly sweet cake, but I do think salt brings out flavors. So it's an enhancer. You don't really taste the salt, but it makes things taste brighter. Let's use that word.
It's a good word.
So, by the way, the recipe is written in Cooking in a Small Kitchen, calls for an optional 3/4 cup of dried currants or raisins I did not use, and I think actually the cake is better for it. Meaning without the raisins or currants. I think in those days I felt I had to embellish. You know, I was young. I didn't know how to edit myself. And the other thing about the recipe is written in the book. I didn't have this in the house. I didn't do it. But what I did was I buttered and floured my pan. But in the book's recipe, I have you butter it and then dust it with chopped pecans or walnuts. Now, that's something I'm going to do next time I make this cake, because I think it really does. The little nutty taste and crunch really adds and complements the other flavors. So the other flavors are this little cocoa cinnamon thing we put together. So you put half the batter in the pan. You sprinkle that with half the, or maybe even two-thirds, I would say, of the cinnamon cocoa mixture and sugar mixture, and then put in the rest of the batter, and put the rest of the cinnamon cocoa mixture, sugar mixture, on top. The recipe tells you to smooth out the top where you would inevitably smush the cinnamon cocoa mixture into the batter. And so halfway through the cake, putting this cake in the, getting this cake together for the oven, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try not smushing on one side and smushing on the other. And I think actually the smushed side was better. So I would say take a rubber spatula and just smooth out the top of the cake, and you will be incorporating some of the cocoa cinnamon mixture into the top batter, but that's okay, that's good. And it gets baked for for a very long time in a 325-degree oven for 65 to 75 minutes. Now, I hope I went slow enough with this recipe, so anybody who really wants to bake a pound cake can do it. But let me quickly, since this is a book, I'm sure you can find it on Amazon, an old copy of Cooking in a Small Kitchen. But let me just review the ingredients, and then the mixing is going to have to be on your own. But for the filling topping, it's a half a cup of sugar, a tablespoon and a half of, a tablespoon of cinnamon, and I'm using 2 tablespoons of cocoa. And for the batter, a cup of butter, 1 8-ounce package of cream cheese, 1.5 cups of sugar, 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla, 4 eggs, that's large eggs, 2.25 cups of all-purpose flour, 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, and that was it. I didn't put the currants in. I floured and buttered the pan. Have fun, folks.
Sounds great.
I did. I haven't baked in such a long time. I actually did have fun, even though I was the tiniest bit nervous because I hadn't baked in so long.
I think that's a little bit of a stage nerves isn't bad. But there's one thing that sticks out to me as someone who hasn't baked in a long, long time, and it's the first bit is that you are supposed to use cold butter and cold cream cheese. Because I think habitually people making cookies. Let me soften the butter.
Well, some recipes you do soften. You do start with room temperature butter. In this case, not. You see, I'm beating the hell out of it. Actually, I shouldn't use such a vulgar word. Anyway, I'm trying to clean up my act.
Really? That's a good example.
it's very difficult because we have a bad example that we listen to. Anyway.
Baked pasta.
Pardon me?
Baked pasta.
Baked pasta. So I don't know how I ran across this recipe on the internet, but I did. And it's a baked pasta supposedly from Trani, T-R-A-N-I. Trani is near Bari, on the Adriatic coast of Italy, in Puglia. It is probably the biggest Jewish town in southern Italy. And so whenever I see anything from Trani, I'm interested because sometimes it's clearly, for whatever reasons I don't want to go into now, to me, a southern Italian Jewish dish. This one might be. I have looked, I've done further research on this baked pasta. I have a lot of regional Italian cookbooks and in Italian, not in Italian, but mainly in Italian. And I have books solely on Puglia. I don't have a book that's only on Trani. I have some old as well as more recent regional Italian cookbooks. I could not find anything closely resembling this. Now, what intrigued me about this recipe, besides that it was from Trani, is that it was a baked pasta made with cherry tomatoes, which, in fact, in the winter, we can often get pretty good ones. And I'm sure I mentioned this last winter. My new thing in the winter is I buy Campari tomatoes, C-A-M-P-A-R-I, spelled exactly like the aperitivo, Campari. And Campari is a made-up name. It's a new strain of tomato. I don't know how new, but they weren't all over the place until just a couple of years ago, I don't think. And now they're everywhere. And they come either, in the winter, they come either from Canada or Mexico. I have not had good luck with Canadian tomatoes, except one day in Quebec years ago, I had the best tomato of my life. But anyway, the ones from Mexico can be very good. So it's a new hybrid tomatoes. They're small. They're not cherry tomatoes, but they are tasty. And what I did was I made this recipe using these tomatoes cut into sixths, meaning cut into small pieces. I know people, oh, well, I'm not doing that. I have a knife that makes it so quick and easy. I recommend it to everyone. It's called a tomato knife. It's made by several companies.
I love mine.
You love your, yeah, serrated blade, yep, has a point that cuts cores out of tomatoes like in a second, less than a second. And it cuts right through a tomato, no problem. You get a nice, can get a nice even dice if you want. I cut my tomatoes, these Camparis, in half, and then each half in half, and then crosswise in three. So in other words, I get 12 pieces of tomato out of these little tomatoes. It was great. So you take 1 pound of these Campari tomatoes, cut as I just said, and you let, and in the morning, put them to marinate, so to speak, with a pinch or two of salt, at least 6 or 8 leaves of basil, cut into or torn into tiny pieces. Doesn't have to be chopped, but just into pieces. And 2 cloves of garlic. I did finely minced. The recipe is, I found it on the internet. By the way, I found this on a website called The Pasta Project. And it's written by a woman who is American, but lives in the northeast of Italy, in the Veneto. She must have been on vacation in Puglia. This is not a traditional Pugliese dish made with cherry tomatoes. In fact, I was thinking about all this, especially after I couldn't find anything even closely resembling this. I realized cherry tomatoes are in Italy a relatively new. It's not a fad anymore, but at least 20 years ago, they were becoming more popular than ever before, and grown more, and exported, and to other parts in Europe. I guess it was EU times. In any case, you make this little salad, 2 cloves of garlic. The original recipe had 1 smashed clove. I did 2 minced cloves of garlic, a lot of basil, and 1 pound of cut-up tomatoes. If you have cherry tomatoes, just cut them in half. If you have good cherry tomatoes, you don't need to cut them any further than that. And you let that marinate. Meantime, you make a little, the plainest of the plain tomato sauces, meaning I sautéed an onion, finely minced onion, a small one. Let's say it's no more than 4 ounces, could have been less, 3 ounces even, a small onion, is 3 tablespoons of olive oil. Now, I do this very, very slowly because I want the onion to get soft but not colored. So about after a few minutes, I added a tablespoon or so, a splash, of water to the pan. And that keeps the onions cooking, and they do get soft. It takes a good 10 minutes to get the onions soft and not colored. And if it requires adding another tiny splash of water, it's okay, because it's just going to evaporate. When the onion is nice and soft, I added... And I wanted to make this with only supermarket products, so I bought the Campari tomatoes, and I used a can of Red Pack tomato puree. You know, and some days I would have used a jar, a bottle. It's a 700-gram bottle of tomato puree from Italy, but the Red Pack, which comes from California, is actually 29 ounces. It's like over 800 grams, but that was okay. And by the way, I just pour it into the skillet where I was sautéing the onion. I don't do this in a saucepan, but I might, because the sauce doesn't have to cook very long, and at least Red Pack tomato puree is very thick. So it splash up my kitchen a lot. So I might actually do it in a deeper pan next time. But I did this in the skillet, as I usually do, and I just let it simmer, stirring it fairly regularly with a big pinch of salt for 10 minutes. That's all it needed. Now, pasta. I know I have only 1 minute left, so let me just say I use these enormous tubes. They're a kind of pockety with ridges. For supermarket ingredients, and I happened to have them in the house, and they were very beautiful in a jar, and I'm thinking, you know, it's enough I looked at them, let me eat them. So I keep thinking, what can I do with them? It's the perfect pasta for a baked pasta like this, because they're very dense, and they don't get too soft when they are cooked and then baked. So you could use rigatoni. You boil up your rigatoni al dente, drain it well, mix it with the tomato puree tomato sauce, layer that in a baking dish with, in addition, a 1/2 pound of supermarket mozzarella shredded on the coarse side of your grater, did we say salt and pepper everything nicely? And a half a cup of grated Parmigiano and a half a cup of grated Pecorino. I had all this in the house. You know, I didn't go out. If you only have Pecorino, use all Pecorino. If you only have Parmigiano, you can use all Parmigiano. And you make a layer of pasta with the sauce, a layer of cheeses, the grated cheese, the mozzarella, and then a layer of your raw tomato sauce or marinated tomatoes. Then another layer of pasta, another layer of cheese, another layer of sauce of the raw tomatoes. And all the juices, by the way, you will have exuded a lot of juice. It's okay. It's good. And on the very top, I sprinkled a half a cup of breadcrumbs moistened with 2 or 3 tablespoons of olive oil. I like to moisten the breadcrumbs with the oil rather than put the breadcrumbs on and then drizzle with oil because I feel the breadcrumbs get crunchier and browner. 45 minutes in a 375 oven.
Okay.
Go look online. I made it almost to the letter of the recipe.
You know what you've done is you've given me a really good idea. I'm getting the wrap-up for doing something, so maybe we'll revisit this.
This is a good company dish.
Yeah.
We were 4 people, 2 of whom, not me, not Bob, actually, really consume huge amounts of pasta. But it should serve minimum of 6. If you have a full menu, probably 8.
Okay.
All right. Online, too.
Okay. Love okay. to all. Okay.
Have a warm day.
Yes, you too.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robinhood Radio. And you can hear him, of course, online, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.